Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. The sports business is huge. At upwards of $60 billion a year in the United States alone, Americans spend as much money or more on sports as they do on gasoline. With all of this money changing hands, sports has turned into big business. With that comes along all the other elements of big business. Ethics can take a back seat to profits. The current NFL debacle proves this point. Unfortunately, those problems are rather predictable and probably will plague us forever. But another problem in this lucrative market is growing, and it affects our vulnerable youth and their parents. Entrepreneurs have figured out that they can make money on the 55 million kids playing sports in our country. This is natural, and it's not bad. But what happens when the needs of the kids take a backseat to making a profit? Are people taking youth sports too far and sacrificing our kids for a buck and their ego? This program welcomes Christy Minkoff to the show to give us unique insight into this complex issue. Hi, Christy. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Okay, I really wanted you on this program because today we're going to be talking about the sports market, which is absolutely huge. And with your unique background, you started on Wall Street. You're a finance and advisor, and then worked on Wall Street, and then your youth education and involvement with youth. And then also your unique background as a business manager for the Whitecaps, which is the only professional women's hockey team in the United States, which provided you with so much opportunity working with Division I and Olympic level athletes. I really wanted to talk to you about the sports market, how it's changing, how much opportunity there is, how it's affecting our culture, and then really talk about youth sports, because that's the big market that's growing, and there's a lot of concern with that market and how it's affecting our kids. But first I wanted to talk about adult sports and just the market in general. And what I've learned through the different research and studies I looked at is the size of the market is close to $60 billion. It's absolutely huge.
Wow.
Yeah, it's huge. And I didn't realize until I looked at it how big that market really was. We spend more on sports than we do on gas. Or about the same. Yeah, a little bit more on sports. And it depends on how you look at sports, whether, you know, it's really broad. Ticket sales and does walking count as sports and all sorts of things when they were looking at it. But it's absolutely huge. But there are some issues in adult sports that are going on right now that I want to talk about and what your thoughts are on them. You know, the NFL is just huge. It's just a cultural icon in our society. But there's some recent things that are going on in the NFL, like with Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice and some of the abuse scandals and things. What are your thoughts on some of that?
Well, I think what you're seeing is you're seeing business, again, mixed with sport. First, they allow them to come back, and then they ban them. Probably banning them, most likely, because sponsors are pulling their sponsorship. So it comes right back to money. But also, you're looking at athletes that are in a sport that's violent. And when you're learning a sport, you learn that aggressiveness in your sport. It's hard to turn that switch off, you know, from sport and athletics to home life.
Because it's such an emotional thing that they go through, right? And so that trigger of emotion that they're having in football when they're on the field, it comes up in different situations.
Oh, yeah. Well, when my kids are playing, they play the most aggressive when they're emotional. And, you know, as a parent, that when your child gets on you and gets to you, you get emotional. And people react when they're emotional. You're not really using a lot of ration when you're emotional. You just react. Like somebody slaps you. Sometimes people just have an automatic response to, you know, hit back. Fight or flight, it's a natural, inborn tendency that we have.
Well, what do you think of the Ray Rice situation? He was initially suspended for 2 games, and then once that video became public, then they decided to suspend him indefinitely. And there's evidence they're not sure, but I think they did. They had that video well before it hit the public, and they're just keeping it quiet. But it was just so bad, they had to do something about it.
Well, how different is that than some of the abuse that you see in other areas of our culture? You see it in churches. You know, you see abuse there. But then again, it comes back to money. It comes back to the sponsors. All of a sudden, the sponsors are also put out there on trial by the public. And do they want to have their product tied to an abusive individual?
Well, and I think that's good. I think that's a positive part of business. You know,
yeah.
Wow, that's positive.
But it holds them accountable. But, you know, maybe those sponsors also knew about that, and who knows?
Until it becomes public, everything's under the rug, right?
I think that's part of our culture, too. I think that unless you expose it, unless it's exposed, and in many areas, abuse, unless it's exposed, a lot of people don't even maybe realize that it's abuse. They maybe that's what they're used to. That's what all they know.
Yeah, that I can see, because the violence is inherent in the game, right? It's a very aggressive game, and sports culture, and this is something, this is why I have you on the show, as well, I want you to talk about that. Sports culture in and of itself can be kind of a bullying, violent environment, and if they grow up with that, and they don't know where that boundary is, right, it can turn into something that is out of control.
Well, I think that's a hard thing with kids, and I've been working with kids for 20 years, and the hardest thing is to tell a child, be aggressive out there, you know, make sure you kick that soccer ball with gusto, and then when you come off the field, be nice to your friend. Be nice. You know, how do you do that? How does a child comprehend to be nice 1 minute and aggressive the next? How can we share with somebody or take turns when we're supposed to, you know, take that for ourselves? And I think that's what I've seen in my 20 years of working with children, that it's a fine line, but it's a learned behavior. There's some kids that get it, some kids that don't, and some kids are more aggressive than others just by their personality types. I think it carries on into adulthood, though. We are what we grew up with. We are a product of our environment.
And that's,
we have to learn as adults to change.
And that's pretty important. When I look at some of the other stats, 70-80% of our executive leadership in our country has participated in sports as a youth. They're getting so much of their youth. They're getting so much of their life lessons, learning how to work with others. We're learning how to work with the team, learning how to deal with their emotion in a productive, competitive way. Those learning lessons are going to then be brought back to our business and our culture when these children grow up. And
oh, sure. Think about how many teams are actual, really teams. You look at the professional sports right now, they're marketing the all-stars. They're not marketing teams. So when you go back to that corporate culture, how many managers really, really focus on a team?
Well, they all talk about it. We all talk about it.
And you know, the successful businesses, the successful parts of business are teams. Those companies that are maybe
exactly.
The smaller companies
exactly.
Or the mid-level companies or even the small groups and the big companies, I think are more successful when they do work as a team and you have a group of people who work together and have camaraderie and they care about each other getting to the same point. But I think that one of the reasons why we don't have job security and people jump around from job to job to job is because they know they're not on a team.
They need to feel a sense of belonging, and it's really hard to find that sense of belonging where they're valued, they have that good fit. And the cost to businesses to have that turnover is huge.
Hopefully they'll start changing. Maybe that'll come about with this whole new happiness psychology.
What's this happiness psychology?
Well, there's a lot of books and a lot of research being done on the whole happiness factor, taking a look at the positive things in life versus the negative, and instead of going back in your past and, you know, uncovering all the issues, take a look now and look forward and choose to be happy. You make a choice to decide how you're going to feel and use those emotional aspects of our humanness and decide to have positive emotions. We have to remind ourselves, you know, to be happy and to be joyful and have gratitude. Be grateful for what we have. That's a big, big movement right now within our culture.
And also of accepting who you are, maybe not getting so worked up over not being perfect.
Exactly. It all does kind of come down to that perfectionist. And you look at most athletes, they're all very, well, you have to be perfect. You know, you have to, but in order to be perfect, you have to be able to make a lot of mistakes. And that's one thing that with this whole happiness psychology is, it's make mistakes. Get out there and try. Get out there and do. Be active. Instead of sitting back and having fear to fail, be active and get out there and make mistakes. And the one thing I've noticed is that people don't want to talk about their mistakes. But everybody who is successful in life, in business, sports, has made tons and tons and tons of mistakes.
Yeah, my mistakes can roll around. If you write them on a little piece in tiny little font and you roll it out, it would go out for a long time.
But that means you're living. That means you're trying. How else will you know what works?
Yeah, that's true. And being able to take risks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're afraid to take risks, you're not going to get better. And I think with sports, if you don't have confidence, and the same with business, you're not going to develop confidence if you're afraid to take chances.
That's right. And you know, when you go back to youth, those coaches that are yelling and screaming at all those kids, they're hurting that confidence. And instead of encouraging mistakes, encouraging effort, they basically kind of squash that because maybe they missed the net or they missed the check or, you know, totally didn't kick the ball and whiffed on it. But we need to have those opportunities to make those mistakes over and over and over again.
Well, I saw a stat that the pressures on young children is just so high. It's higher than it's ever been. But there's a stat that 13% of young tennis players are reported being hit by their parents after a match because of, you know, their disappointment with how they just performed. And
yeah, well, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking USA Hockey had all of those pamphlets, and they had a big kick on, don't talk to your parents, don't talk to the coaches after a game, don't talk to your kid after a game. The big thing that Liberty Mutual program had was, you know, talk to your kid about all three positive things about the game and leave it at that. And it's his game, it's her game, it's not our game as parents and as adults.
Well, and I think that's a good example of 13%. I was actually shocked when I saw that the kids are actually being physically hit because they're not happy with how they're performing. But in my experience, I've seen a lot, both my kids play sports. My experience, I've seen a lot of kids get yelled at constantly and berated constantly by their parents on the sidelines. Coaches constantly yelling at these kids. And to me, that's a very abusive bullying environment. And that they would, in order to protect themselves, they're either going to just say, I'm done with it and quit, which the numbers show, or if they do put up with it, they become that way themselves and start acting bullying and those things in life. When you have 70 to 80% of our executive leaders coming out of sports, you know, environments, How is that going to affect their leadership?
Oh, people get angry. When people get angry, you know that that person's trying to manipulate. That's what anger is. It's a manipulation tool. And also, parents are trying to get a return on their investment, as are coaches. They invested a lot of time in that child, teaching them that skill. And it's a risk you take, but it's a return on investment, just like in the corporate world.
But they have to be logical about that. I think it becomes irrational because you start the kid. I saw another study. I've been doing a lot of research on this, as you know, before we talked on this. And another study was saying that the more money that parents spend on their kids' sport, whether it's through additional training and personalized coaching and all these other things that they do, the more money they spend on that, the less fun a kid has. And so it's just destructive, I think.
Well, it's stressful. I could imagine. You're going and you're doing one thing, the same sport, every day, and it's pressure. I spent money on that. You have to go. Well, maybe they don't want to go. Maybe there's a birthday party or something else they want to go to. There's something to be said about having a well-rounded child.
Well, you know, and sports is such a great way to get some of that. They learn to work together. They acquire leadership skills, get a sense of discipline, and learn how to communicate. This is something I talk in my class at the university, is I talk about how to work as a team. And for those people that played youth sports and worked as a team, they get a lot of those life lessons inherently in that environment. And if you haven't had those life lessons in those environments, you're going to have to pick it up somewhere. It's important. But so there's so many good things about sports, but these other life lessons are not so fun to get.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good things in sports. You do learn a lot. You learn the good and the bad. You build huge relationships and friendships that last lifetimes through sports, and so do the parents. Some of the parents are so competitive that they're not friends at all while their kids are competing with each other until after they're done competing.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot from people whose kids are already, my kids are right in the thick of it. My son's almost done, which is, I'm actually kind of looking forward to him being done with the sports part of it, but my daughter's right in there. And you can just see some of the competition from these parents. It's just crazy. And if your kid is good at something, it gets even more fierce, I think. But, you know, I want to talk about the size of the market again. The market is, like I said, $60 billion market was just huge. But the youth market is a pretty big chunk of that. Just the money being reported to the IRS by nonprofit clubs is about $5 billion. We know that the size of the youth market is much bigger than $5 billion because it's of that $60 billion because a lot of it's on shoes and sporting equipment and all that stuff, and that's not included in that $5 billion. So the youth market is just absolutely huge, and it keeps growing. With almost 50 million kids playing youth sports, there's this whole untapped market, and I suppose it's not untapped, it's starting to be pretty tapped, but it's there's just so many opportunities when you have that big of an audience that you can tap into. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing as well with all this marketing. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think you also, in addition to that, there's also fundraising that is occurring. Sporting events are becoming fundraising opportunities for all kinds of different charities, and you also have the elite and the select to get to the U.S. Olympic teams, and all of that, in addition to just the tournaments and
aren't a lot of these select teams aren't just to get so many more kids participating. Sometimes these select teams aren't really select teams. They're really watered down teams to make them larger so there's more money coming in.
Oh, I think so. I think there's a lot of overkill. you look back 20 years ago, and they would take the cream of the crop, and they would cut that in half, and then you'd have your national team. You'd in volleyball and basketball, softball, hockey, and football. They have done that now. They do camps before the tryouts, before the selection process, and it just keeps going on and on. Some kids can only do one sport now, or they don't have the opportunity to even participate in those programs. I was a three-sport athlete, and I rode horses in the summer. I couldn't imagine playing one sport all year long. I would have really been burnt out.
Well, in my studies, it shows that 75% of kids are playing sports all year round. You know, of the kids that, well, I don't know if it's the same, but of the kids that are playing sports later on in high school, 75% of them are playing it year round. And I would think that just based on my experience, a large percentage are starting to do it year round because they have to in order to compete at that high school level.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's what you're seeing, but that's what I'm seeing.
Oh, it is. It is, but I've also seen kids start to take breaks. I don't know if it's just coming full circle. My kids are older now and in college, and they're playing club sports, and it's still competitive, but they're playing because they love the game, and they work hard because they want to. There's not somebody yelling and screaming at them. They do it not for a scholarship, but they do it for the love of the game. One thing that parents have to remember is they go to work all day. Are they having fun? Are they enjoying their life? Are they enjoying their work day? You want your kids to enjoy their work day. You don't want them to grow up and just have a job. You know, you want them to love to go to work.
You want them to have passion for what they're doing. And
that's
what we want in our culture. We want passionate children. We want passionate workers in our business. So what do you think of this, of the college scholarship opportunities? You know, you work with so many D1 athletes, and you've seen so much of this. What do you think of kids' ability to get college scholarships? And what do you see as far as when these kids are identified, what is the likelihood that they're going to get them? And are kids pushed into it when they don't really want to play in college?
I think there are some kids that are playing because they've worked so hard for it that that's all they know. That's been their dream and their passion for so long. I mean, there's some that really still have that dream and that passion, and there's others that don't really have that dream and that passion, but they feel that they need to do it because they've worked so hard. They've put so much time into it, so much money into it, that they need to do this. When you're in college and you're playing, it's a job a lot, but it's still fun. I mean, they're having a ton of fun, of the students I know, playing baseball and football and hockey and softball. We know some volleyball players, too, and it's work. It's a job, but you learn to have that self-discipline to get up and get going and get your homework done as well. You're limited sometimes to what degrees you can come out with. There's some athletes that go 4 years, and then they go another 4 years to get the degree that they wanted, or another 2 years to get the degree that they're really interested in and have a passion for, that they want to spend the rest of their life doing. I think that you can get a college scholarship in sports, but there's a 60% increased chance to get an academic scholarship over an athletic scholarship.
How much of an increase?
60%.
Yeah, 60%. There's much more.
66%.
66%, okay, the exact number. There's just much better. Plus, it's a little bit, it's easier to obtain, and it might help you longer in life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, our bodies wear down as we get older. There's somebody told me once that we all become amateurs. We all become pickup players, and we become those athletes in our 30s, 40s, 50s that we're doing something else.
Even Wayne Gretzky is now a rec player, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody turns into that. Okay, well, since you have so much work with different Olympic athletes, I want to talk a little bit about what makes them champions. With all your background, it takes a special person mentally to become an Olympic athlete. And what is special about them in general that you've seen?
Well, first, I think there's a lot of athletes out there that could be on the Olympics and maybe should have been in the Olympics, but maybe timing wasn't right or just things didn't go their way. There's a lot of special people out there. I think there's a perfectionism, there is a work ethic, but there is joy for the sport.
It's a genuine
ADHD tendencies.
but it's a genuine joy for just a passion for being the best that can be, almost to an extreme, right?
Yeah, kind of like an OCD. Yeah, it's almost like they can be a little bit over the top on being perfect. And I think some athletes really have to watch that they don't go overboard in their perfectionism. And you know, it's just like any culture. I think when you're doing something and you're so into it, you have to love it, or you're not going to be that great at it. But I think there's a lot of athletes that are out there, and you know, timing, Olympics is only 4 years.
My daughter had played on this team where one of our coaches was Kim Martin, who is the Sweden goaltender for the Olympics, and she was rated the top goaltender in the world a couple of years. And she talked to the girls about what you're talking about, the strive for perfection. And she was talking to the girls about having an eating disorder, and that she was just so... she wanted her body to be so perfect to be able to do what she needed to have accomplished that she developed an eating disorder, and telling the girls to not get caught up in that and trying to help them through that. And she was talking about that particular, exactly what you touched on, about how perfection can really hurt you and to how you can balance that out. And I thought that was a wonderful talk that she gave to the girls, and it was pretty timely, being that my daughter's 13 years old. But I think that touches on what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I think we take a look at depression and we take a look at eating disorders like that, and it all stems down to control. And, I mean, not depression necessarily, but when you don't feel like you're doing your best, or you don't feel like you're good enough, and you maybe miss your mark on making that team, or and keep in mind, all these teams are out of anyone's control of making. You can be the best and better than people that are on a team, but you're not the one picking the team.
And that's the same thing in business, right? You just always control. That's why these lessons are so great. You can't always control what client's going to pick you, because it can be some behind-the-scenes stuff that you just don't have control over.
Oh, and that's why I wanted my kids to be in athletics. The life lessons in athletics, the good and the bad, you have to take them all. It builds a mental toughness. It builds a mental aspect that, I don't know, I think it can give you stamina later on in life. It can help you with the pitfalls and the downs, because you know you're going to have them. There's ups and downs in life, and it's how you handle those ups and downs that make the difference in your stress level and in your health.
Well, with the way you see youth sports going, where do you see youth sports going into the next 10 years?
Oh, I think youth sports are going to continue to build and build and build and build, and then it might just fall off, because I think people are, even right now with just the abuse issues coming out, I think that's one area that parents are going to say, you know, I think I want to keep my kid away from that. I know parents who've changed schools, changed programs, soccer programs, to get away from abusive coaches. And I think that parents are really starting to see how people that they're around affect their children. It's like the TV. The programs that are on the TV that you allow your kids to watch affect how our kids see the world. And you can start to see the disrespect that's from some of the shows that are on TV and how they're treating teachers and how they're treating parents. It'll be interesting to see what really happens, but it's such big business. But unless, like for ice skating and golf and tennis and sports that are expensive, and when you have added fees along to it, I think those are going to be the sports that are going to be the hardest, just because I don't think parents are going to continue to spend that kind of money. If you think about it, over the 10 years my kids were in youth sports, I could have paid both their college funds.
Well, yeah, so if you're going to be spending $10,000, $20,000 a year on your kids, maybe you have a collection of three of them, $10,000 a year on each one, over time, that's pretty much the college tuition.
Oh, yeah, for out of state.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Or and medical so you really school.
You really exactly. You just paid for medical school. So you really have to look at your investments wisely. If you're trying to get that scholarship, then I'm not so sure. If you're trying to just give your kid an opportunity to excel and do the best they can and build life lessons and all those other things, then, you know, that's great. But then you should really look at whether each thing is worth it and whether you're, you know, spending money in a way that doesn't make sense.
It's hard to keep that in perspective. It is really hard for a parent to keep that in perspective when you're out there and you're in the thick of it.
I know.
And you get a signal, and we want to do this, and you want to do that, you want to do this, and
unfortunately, I know.
We'll just not go on vacation this year because there's a hockey tournament or a baseball tournament or a basketball tournament.
Well, what do you think of these large government expenditures that they're making on these big stadiums and... You know, and then also our schools are spending so much money on the new facilities for sports. And I mean, what do you think of that? Because we're all affected. I mean, let's face it, we're all affected either through taxes, either we're, as a company, we are being hit up by youth clubs to sponsor them. Maybe it's our own children, our nieces, our nephews, our grandchildren. We're being hit up to help with fundraising. And all of us are affected by this culture and this huge industry. So what do you think of all the money being spent by our governments and our schools on the facilities?
Well, it seems to me there's a lot of duplication. You have a football field at each high school, and you have weight rooms, and I think the weight rooms get used a lot by all the sports. But I guess I would like to see, and I guess I use those facilities as a community member. I go and run the tracks and I use the fields to play with my kids when they were younger. I don't think a lot of people realize that they can do that, or who knows, maybe some of those places are locked up tight. But considering that taxpayers pay for that, I guess I would like to see more of a community center situation versus just a stadium. I mean, if there's a stadium and it's sitting there and it's not being used, the public should be able to use it since we paid for it. I guess that's maybe new thinking. It's different thinking because, you know.
Well, because school facilities and pro team facilities and things like that are more, I think that they're more accepted and supported by the community than a rec center that would be used by everybody. For some reason, people are just more supportive. When you attach kids on, you know, a school on it, they're much more supportive than if it's going to be just some community general use. It seems to me, in my experience, and maybe I'm wrong.
No, you know, I agree with you. I agree with you. I would just like to see those facilities used more by the community. I'd like to see them opened up. I would like to see our communities be more involved in our schools, not just going to the football games and supporting the football program and buying your ticket, but also being able to use those facilities. Those facilities are sitting open all day Sunday. Their football field's open. You know, the track around it is open. There just should be the ability. However, then you get the security issues, you know, thrown.
Yeah, there's bigger issues, but still, I understand it. So much of our tax money is going to this. Maybe there's some other ways that we can get benefit from this. But, you know, the bigger issue is some of these huge new stadiums that we get, the $1.2 billion stadium that they're building. And, you know, from my perspective, a lot of those, from what I've heard and what I've talking to people, a lot of those projects are really started by the construction companies and the architects because they're looking for projects and ways to make money. So they approach the pro teams and they are actually crafting this. And then they sell the pro team on the fact, and the pro team wants a good environment too. So they're really into it. And so there's a lot of, it's not just coming because the old stadium was a piece of junk and it needs to be replaced. It's coming because these big construction companies are looking for projects so they can make money. I know that that's true because I've been told that point blank by, you know, leaders in the construction industry.
Well, isn't that kind of the way business works?
It is. It
is. Everybody wants the newest and greatest and best. You know, I don't know. I like the old flavor of Comiskey Field and the different places that you go to where there's so much history and nostalgia. We're in a disposable environment. Our culture has gone from buying something with real quality, you know, big quality door to a hollow door, and who cares? I'm going to replace it instead of paint it. I'm not going to take care of the door. I'm just going to replace it in 2 years when it rots. I mean,
well,
seems to be what we're doing with our stadiums.
Well, and that's what they said 10 years ago about the retail and with clothing, how clothing has gotten, you know, with the Gap and the, especially Old Navy, those kind of concepts where it was more about throwaway clothes. Every year you get new clothes. Not just the wealthy goes out and gets all new clothes and a whole new wardrobe. Everyone goes out and gets a whole new wardrobe. And that's, you know, kind of the concept with everything, right?
Well, yeah, with the scooters.
Yeah.
Craftsmanship is not there like it used to be.
You know, our patience is gone. So, okay, so with all your wisdom, we need to bring this together on how we can give people tips on how to, if they have children, they have grandchildren, they have, you know, their businesses looking to sponsor youth programs. Give us some tips on how we can go about making good decisions for our communities so that long-term, and for our children, so that long-term we're healthier, we're more productive, we're setting kids up to be, you know, good leaders, business leaders, we're spending our money more wisely. Give us some good tips on this.
Well, I guess my big mantra is self-esteem is everything. I think that you can't really teach self-esteem. Self-esteem has to be experienced. It grows with you as you experience positive things happening in your life. We need to create environments that positive things can be happening for these kids throughout their youth, whether it's athletics or academics. In athletics, coaches need to be encouraging and positive. And pushing kids, too, is good if you can push them in a way that is not an abusive way. And there's a fine line, I think, between that, getting emotional, and pushing in a positive
Well, keeping your ego out of it, right? You're not...
Keep your ego out of it.
So
yeah.
You're not...
It's not about you. It's about the kid.
So you're giving them high expectations because you want them to excel, not because you want to make sure that team wins because it's about you. It's about them, and how do you get them to excel?
Yes. And high expectations is good because you do want to tell that child that you do have high expectations for them, and you know that they can perform. You know that they can reach high limits. That's good. I think one other thing we really need to watch out for, to make sure that kids know that they're good people, whether they make mistakes or not, and that mistakes are the only way they're going to be able to be successful. I know people who their self-esteem is tied to their last performance, whether they won or they lost or they just didn't have an on night, and that's really scary because that's a road you don't want to go down.
Well, we want people that can take risks. We want businesses that can take risks. We want our children to have the confidence to take risks.
Right. And if your self-esteem is tied to your last performance,
yeah, and doesn't.
Dude, that puts fear in you, and then you're no longer active, you're paralyzed.
Well, you don't have confidence, but doesn't that come from a coach pulling them out the minute they make a mistake? Yelling at them for every mistake,
huge.
Or pulling them out for when they make a mistake?
Huge.
It's almost like a coach, if they make a mistake, no, purposely leave them in. I know at times when I was coaching, I was ready to pull out a kid and talk to him, and then they just got done making a really dumb mistake. And then I changed my mind. I'm not going to pull them out yet. Let them go a little bit longer because I don't want them to think I pulled them out for that mistake, even though I was going to pull them out right before that because I needed to talk to them.
Well, one of the huge, a huge parenting technique is setting your child up for failure. A calculated set up your child for failure so that they can learn from that mistake. Parenting with love and logic, it's all over that book and that whole series of books. You want your child to make mistakes. You have to make mistakes in order to learn. Sometimes you have to make 100 mistakes, So you have to have a lot of strikeouts before you have a lot of home runs.
And
a lot of missed shots before, you can make any.
And not be okay with not succeeding and work hard to overcome those mistakes, but be okay with making them, right? I mean...
Well, how else do you have passion and drive to do it? If you can't make a mistake, you get paralyzed for getting yelled at. How can you...
You can't
to go and make another mistake.
You can't.
And that goes to business, too. When you're out there and you're communicating with people, your clients, you're going to learn how to get along with people, how to communicate, how to be polite, how to win people over and how to work together. But it's not going to come for you right when you come out of college or high school. It's going to come as you get out there and you're talking to people.
And then you just tap into all these experiences you had as a youth. So as parents, as educators, as people who are trying to create leaders in our communities, we want to give kids the confidence to try things and to make mistakes because those are the kind of executives we want later.
Yeah. Yes, we do. I have this saying, oops, learned again. And you've probably heard me say it.
I think I have. Repeat it here.
It's oops, learned again.
Oh, yeah. I always
tell my children all the time.
I tell people just flush it down the toilet. Let's move on.
Wipe it off.
Yeah. Okay, Christy, I think you've really helped today. I think people have a lot of good tips they can take from you, and I think this is really important. I think this is one of the more important issues we have of the day. It's one of those background issues that is so large and it's so pervasive that we really do need to be looking at these things because this is the future of our communities and our businesses. But thank you so much for talking to me today.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Yeah, no problem. Talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye. The sports industry is huge business. With this much money changing hands and with so many people participating, it directly or indirectly affects all of us. When making decisions that impact our youth and our communities, it is important for us to be smart and to look at what we are trying to accomplish.
Our culture is changing constantly based on what our people are exposed to. When it comes to our youth, they are like sponges. What they experience will change our culture and the future of our country. If we want our kids to be shallow, uncompassionate people, then we expose them to those environments. Over time, they will change our culture to be shallow and uncompassionate. It is a fact that approximately 75% of our executive leaders in this country have participated in youth sports. So taking this further means that the majority of our future leaders are heavily groomed for leadership in the current sports environment. This could be a very good thing, but only if we are paying attention and not being taken for a ride by the industry without knowing what we're doing. That's it for now. Have a wonderful day.